All I had to do was go to the website to see what David recorded. No, we only have 14, 15, and 16 up there, David.
Yeah, I haven't put last week's up yet, but I think Martin was right that we did 16 twice. But that's okay because the commentary was different.
It's always going to be different.
Yeah.
It's off the top of my head.
Okay.
Here we go. Yeah. Are we ready? Okay, Jeremiah chapter 21, verse 1. The word which came unto Jeremiah from Yahweh when King Zedekiah sent unto him Asher, the son of Melchiah, Zephaniah, the son of Maaseiah, the priest, saying, inquire, I pray thee, of Yahweh for us, for Nebuchadrezzar, king of Babylon, maketh war against us. If so be that Yahweh will deal with us accordingly to all his wondrous works, and he may go up from us. And said Jeremiah unto them, thus shall ye say to Zedekiah, thus saith Yahweh God, Israel, behold, I will turn back the weapons of war that are in your hand, with ye fight against the king of Babylon and against the Chaldeans, which besiege you without the wall. And I assemble them to the midst of and I myself will fight against you with an outstretched hand and strong arm, even in anger and in fear, great wrath. And I will smite the inhabitants of this city, both man and beast. They shall die of a great pestilence. And afterward, saith Yahweh, I will deliver Zedekiah of Judah and his servants, the people, and such that are left in the city from the pestilence, from the sword, and from the famine, into the hand of Nebuchadrezzar, king of Babylon, and into the hand of their enemies, and into the hand of those that seek their life. He shall smite them with the edge of the sword. He shall not spare them, neither have pity nor have mercy. And unto this people thou shalt say, thus saith Yahweh, behold, I set before you the way of life and the way of death. He that abideth in this city shall die by the sword and by the famine and by the pestilence. But he that goeth out and falleth to the Chaldeans that besiege you, he shall live, and his life shall be unto him for a prey. I have set my face against this city for evil and not for good, saith Yahweh. It shall be given unto the hand of the
user disconnected from your
and he
channel.
Shall burn it fire. And touching the house of King of Judah, say, hear ye the word of Yahweh. O house of David, thus saith the Yahweh, execute judgment and deliver him that is spoiled out of the hand of the oppressor, lest my fury go out like a fire, burn that none can quench it, because of the evil of your doings. Behold, I am against you, inhabitants of the valley and rock plains, which say, who shall come down against us, or who shall enter into our house? I will punish you according to the fruits of your doing, saying that, saith Yahweh, I will kindle a fire in the forest thereof, and it shall devour all things round about it. End of chapter 21 of Jeremiah.
Hey, Bill. Your mic, there was a whole bunch of side noise that was just.
Oh, wow. I have a headset on. How is that happening? That's weird.
I don't think it's actually picking up through your headset. I heard you typing too, I think, or someone else maybe.
Yes. Yeah,
I wasn't typing.
It sounded like paper moving around or something, but it was.
That's weird. I was flipping through a book, but I wasn't typing. Okay. Jeremiah, chapters 1 through chapter 25, verse 13 are the same order in the Septuagint and the King James Version, right? But now we're in chapter 21, so we're not to the point where the two versions diverge in each order of the chapter. Not yet, we're not there. However, here we are in Jeremiah chapter 21, and the king is Zedekiah, right? In verse 1. And Asher, the son of Melchiah, is first mentioned in Jeremiah chapter 20. So chapters 20 and 21 must be in the correct chronological order, apparently. Okay. But Zedekiah is the king, and not Josiah, who we should expect to be king, because Jeremiah's mission started, as I've dated it at the beginning of this Bible study, at the beginning of Jeremiah, in the 13th year of Josiah, was 627 BC, right? So Josiah is mentioned as being king again in chapter 22, and in chapter 25 and chapter 26 is the son of Josiah. Chapter 25, it's only in the 13th year of Josiah. In chapter 21 here, Zedekiah is the king, but Zedekiah was not the king of Judah until 599 BC. He became the king of Judah. Maybe as early as 596.
Sound muted. Sound resumed.
So 597.
Sound muted. Sound resumed.
Zedekiah was the last king of Judah. For the last.
Sound muted. Sound resumed.
A week for each book. Yes. You had to read the whole book and write down all the years and figure out what the order of the chapters of the book should be from the dates that the prophets themselves supply, which is possible to a great degree. It may not be perfect, but it's possible.
When was it that the Bible was broken down into chapter and verse again? I can't remember.
Well, that happened. It first happened, I think, with Bishop Usher, or perhaps somebody a little older than him in the Anglican Church in the Middle Ages, probably the 12th or 13th centuries, I'm guessing. I have it somewhere in my writing that I found it and repeated it, but I don't remember it in my head. But it wasn't for a long time that the Bible was actually broken down into the verses and chapters that we now have, which are far from perfect. But the Bible was broken down, the Gospels were broken down into sections that are different than the verses and chapters that we have before the time of Eusebius of Caesarea by the 4th century.
Because it was written like a continuous narrative, somebody had to move that around on purpose or it wouldn't make sense.
Some Jew dropped all the scrolls and picked them up and put them back in the wrong order.
Oops.
I'm kind of half kidding, but
yeah, what really happened is they dropped half the scrolls, burned half of them, brought another section of them, burned all them.
There's a clutch as much of it as they could. Not here and there.
You're right, Martin. My headset is picking up every turning of every paper.
Yeah, it must have a different noise gate settings.
Yeah, well, I don't know if I ever set it on this laptop.
Sound muted. Sound resumed. Microphone activated.
You know what? You could maybe mute while Don's reading and then unmute. I don't know.
This might be better now. I changed the option to volume gate.
Yeah.
We'll see how that works. I don't hear the paper, the page turns as loudly, but I still hear them. In the Nestle land, Novum Testamentum Graece, right?
Muted.
Greek New Testament. They have a preface in the introduction that is, there's an introduction and then there's another section before the actual text begins. And it's from the epistles, Epistula ad Carpianum et Canones of Eusebius of Caesarea, and he actually had the Gospels broken up into numbered sections and created a chart that cross-referenced the different numbered sections. So you could go to different sections that he called canons and see that Matthew section 8, Mark chapter 2, Luke chapter 7, John chapter 10 all treated the same subject. Yeah, you see what I mean? It might be a particular parable, a particular story that appears in all of those books. And he had a systematic way of cross-referencing all of those gospels in the places where they agreed by breaking them up into sections. Now, that's not quite our chapters and verses, but you can see that that's an early effort to create a cross-reference based on different sections or chapters of the gospel. But what we have is actually from an English Anglican bishop of the Middle Ages, and I don't remember his name, but I'm going to try to find it. And that didn't work. That went down in flames. When was the Bible put into verses and chapters? This is right. I know this is right. Stephen Langton, the Archbishop of Canterbury in the early 13th century. And the Wycliffe Bible in 1382 used Stephen Langton's chapter and verse pattern. So there you have it. I'm not saying that what we have now is exactly what Stephen Langton did, but that's where your chapters and verses started with him. And boy, did I think he fucked it up in a lot of places. I'm sorry, he did.
Yeah, especially with the with that says not to add or take away, and here he is changing around the whole format, right?
Well, there's so many chapters, especially in the prophets, that you could start reading at the beginning of the chapter and totally miss the context that's dependent on the text of the previous chapter.
Sometimes it's like a couple chapters later, he's still talking about the same subject, and you might forget, you know,
right,
because there's so many things to follow, and they forget to follow them through.
Exactly. I agree. Especially like the epistle to the Romans and the comparison of Jacob and Esau, which lasts for several chapters. And people take that line from Romans chapter 11 and totally forget the context in which Paul wrote that about all Israel being saved. So they forget the part about they not being all Israel who are of Israel.
I know there was a lot of people back when I was many years ago that didn't understand that.
Because the churches don't teach it.
I would think it come from people thinking it was some kind of spiritual thing or something.
Yeah, well, that's the way they do it, because they don't understand the background history. And they don't really understand the words of Christ, where he said things like, you don't believe me because you're not my sheep. And they think they're not a sheep so they don't because they don't believe him. But that's not what he said.
Totally changes the meaning every bit.
Right.
Are we on chapter 22 now?
Oh, we didn't really talk about chapter 21. I apologize. I don't know if there's anything to discuss in chapter 21. It's just another guarantee that Babylon, the Babylonians are going to come and destroy Jerusalem and take them all away.
Well, one thing is that if you resist the will of God, even if it's a punishment and you don't like it, you know, you're going to die. So yeah. you can't resist the punishments of God.
Oh, you accept his judgments.
Right. Well, Yahweh said here he's going to deliver Zedekiah himself, which he kind of does, even though it wasn't really comfortable for Zedekiah having his eyes poked out.
No, that was kind of a bad deal.
Yeah. But those Israelites who go out of the city and follow the Chaldeans, they will be preserved and their life will be their prey, their booty.
Yes.
And those who remain in the city and resist the will of God, they will die in the city.
Yep, they get wiped out.
But those who stay in Babylon, they'll die in Babylon.
Right. Well, that was Yahweh's will for them to go to Babylon. And if you resist his will, if you resist your punishment, you're going to end up even worse.
That's basically what, if I had to sum it up, that's what I learned way back when I was in the Patriot Movement all that time. I thought I was doing good. And when it finally dawned on me, I was actually fighting against God, against Yahweh, not with him or for him. I wasn't accepting what he put her down that way, and it's going to go that way. Put them people over you.
Right.
That totally changed my ideas on that. I walked away from it after that because I realized I was making one huge mistake. I was doing good.
And all the compromises activated. Men have to make, you know, but God doesn't make those compromises.
Nope.
Yeah, I've got something. Verse 2, they spell Nebuchadrezzar instead of Nebuchadnezzar? Why, like, I mean, it goes to show that they're constantly changing consonants and vowels.
Yeah.
Perhaps they're confused because it's always an N after the D everywhere else.
Yeah, it should be Nebuchadnezzar, but it's odd that the resh and the nun or N, that they don't really look that similar. Not like the R and a D or the Vav and the R.
So is the proper pronunciation Nebuchadnezzar?
Well, it that's where they use it again in this chapter in verse 7 with an R.
Yeah.
But everywhere else, I'm pretty sure it's an N.
Well, it's actually Nebuchadrezzar in 31 verses. In Jeremiah, from this point forward, and four times in Ezekiel. So it's 27 times here, but it's in the book of Nezar in 57 verses, 60 times in 57 verses, whereas in the book of Drezar, 31 times in 31 verses. It's in the book of Nezar, 60 times in 57 verses, not in Ezekiel at all.
And your name is Will, not Bill.
Yeah. But in 2 Kings, 1 Chronicles, 2 Chronicles, Ezra, Nehemiah, Esther, one time, and Jeremiah, and Daniel. And most of the time in Daniel, it's in the book of Nezar. But more often in Jeremiah, it's the book of Drezar, which is kind of strange. More often in Jeremiah than it is the book of Nezar. And in Ezekiel, four times. But the Nebuchadrezzar form does not show up in Ezra, Nehemiah, Chronicles, Kings, or Daniel.
Well, Nebuchadnezzar is easier to say, I can tell you that.
It's right. It's kind of, minor. In relation to the whole rest of the name, right? But it's one consonant in like 8 or 9. But that's besides the point. It's definitely a scribal error 31 times. And as far as I'm concerned, as far as I've ever read, I've never seen the name variated in any inscriptions, that it's always Nebuchadnezzar. But I haven't read the inscriptions themselves, so maybe the translators always made it the book of Nezar. And I don't think it varies in the Babylonian inscriptions. I think it's a Masoretic text mistake that it's the book of Drezar 31 times. That's over 30% of the occurrences of the name. 31 times out of 90.
You know, I just checked the New King James, and they have it with the N. Pretty much all the time, all throughout Jeremiah. And if you put in the R on the search, it doesn't come up at all in the New King James.
So well, I'm actually looking at the Hebrew spelling. The way that BibleWorks version 10, thank you, Joe, the way that BibleWorks version 10 has it spelled in Hebrew, it would be Nebuchadrezzar. It has a resh.
Nebuchadrezzar.
Where in Nebuchadnezzar you would have a nun. It has a resh. It actually has a resh. It's Nebuchadrezzar in the Hebrew. And if you hold your cursor over it, in the Brown Driver Briggs lexicon, you'll see both forms, Nebuchadrezzar or Nebuchadnezzar. But I think 31 times, it's a scribal error. That's a lot. That's a very large frequency for a scribal error. 31 times out of 91.
They were probably telling the guy over and over again, hey, you got to stop doing this error. And he was probably stubborn and said, no, you guys yeah. are wrong. I'm doing it this way.
Maybe he just had a stubborn list old or something. They could, that's what, how he said it.
Stubborn old Jew. So, yeah, so when I hold my cursor over this Hebrew word, I could see that the Hebrew letters say the book of Drezar. But when I hold my cursor over the word, it says Nebuchadnezzar. So, I guess the creators of BibleWorks software just understood that Nebuchadnezzar is an error for Nebuchadnezzar. So, we got Nebuchadnezzar 61 times and Nebuchadnezzar 30 times.
User disconnected from your channel.
Or 31 times. 31 times and Nebuchadnezzar 60 times.
Microphone muted.
So that's just over 33%. That's 34% of the occurrences are Nebuchadnezzar.
User entered your channel.
Which actually, is
microphone activated.
Yeah, but you know what? I think remember okay, I don't know if you recall this, but the Germans have a word which is Obenkeneser for a leader or elder to this day. And in Slavic languages, Knez means prince as well. So, I mean, if they're both using an N after the K, kind of think that, I don't know, it sounds like it
user
should be
disconnected
an
from your channel.
Well, yeah, you know what I'm certain is that the book of Nezar itself is a compound word. And that's even evident in the Strong's definition of the word, that the given name, it is Nebo. Protect the boundary, according to Strong's. So it's really just a title because Nebo was some sort of Babylonian god, some sort of Babylonian idol.
Isn't that where we get the word nebulous, like sky or stars? Like,
I would have to look. Nebo. Babylon, Nabu, Nebo, major god in Assyrian Babylonian pantheon. There you have it. So the book of Nezar comes from that name of this god Nebo, and it's really just a title. But we see the same phenomenon in the names of the biblical kings and prophets, where Yahweh is a component of their name. And the rest of their name is some sort of phrase. Yahweh saves is Yahshua. Jeremiah means that he hears Yahweh, right? Daniel means judge of God. So these names are compound names that are related to their God, to their national religion, basically. So the Babylonians seem to have the same... The same naming conventions going on where their sons would be named in some sort of phrase after their god, like Belshazzar is, I don't remember what it means, but it's Baal something. Jezebel, Baal is in her name. Her father was Ethbaal. Baal is in his name. So it seems to be a pretty common convention for names in antiquity. So if you were going to name your kid today and you were a pagan, you would name him Zeus Rapes Everybody. I'm just saying.
I think I saw Zeus him online.
Yeah, Zeus is gay. Odin is a cross-dresser. Odin is a tranny. Yeah.
Odin fag.
Perfect name for a pagan boy today.
Dumbass. You know, wasn't there a guy in the Bible named Fool? So that's what the pagan should be called.
Yeah,
the
right.
Bible, I think I it was.
Microphone muted.
I agree. The book of Drezar. Well, one lexicon has, may Nebo protect the crown, but another one has something about protecting the borders. Nebo protect the boundary. So they don't even know what it means, probably. Or it's not perfectly certain.
Chapter 22.
Why not?
Okie doke. Thus saith Yahweh, go down to the house of the king of Judah and speak there this word, and say, hear the word of Yahweh, O king of Judah, and sitteth upon the throne of David, thou and thy servants and thy people that enter in by these gates. Thus saith Yahweh, execute ye judgment and righteousness, and deliver the spoil out of the hand of the oppressor. Do no wrong. Do no violence to the stranger, the fatherless, nor the widow, neither shed innocent blood in this place. For if you do this thing, indeed, then there shall enter in by the gates of the house, sitting upon the throne of David, riding in chariots, and on he and his servants and his people. And if you will not hear these words, I swear by myself, saith Yahweh, that this house shall become a desolation. For thus saith Yahweh unto the king's house of Judah, thou art Gilead to me, and the head of Lebanon. Yet surely will make thee a wilderness and the cities which are not inhabited. Now prepare destroyers against thee, every one with his weapon. And they shall cut down, they shall strike choice cedars, and they shall cast them into the fire. Many nations shall pass by this city, and shall say every man to his neighbor, wherefore hath Yahweh done this to this great city? Then they shall answer, because they have forsaken the covenant of Yahweh their God, and worshipped other gods and served them. Weep ye not for the dead, neither bemoan him, but weep sore for him that goeth away. He shall return no more, nor see his native country. Thus saith Yahweh, touching Shalom, the son of Josiah, which reigned instead of Josiah, his father, for 7 years this place, he shall not return thither any more, but he shall die in the place whither they have led him captive, and shall see this land no more. Woe unto him that buildeth his house, his chamber by long, use his neighbor's service.
Don? Yep. I can barely hear Don with the he keeps on getting
Bill.
Wow,
it's bad.
That's he's weird. Picking up breathing. Okay.
I'll mute. I wasn't thinking.
Sorry about that. Continue on.
Okay, should I go back a little ways or?
That would be great. Thanks.
Okay, well we'll go to.
Let's go back a few.
For thus saith Yahweh, touching Shalom, the son of Josiah, king of Judah, which reigned instead of Josiah his father, which went forth out of this place, he shall not return thither any more. But he shall die in the place whither they have led him captive, and shall see this land no more. Woe unto him that buildeth his house by unrighteousness, and his chambers by wrong, that uses his neighbor's services without wages, and giveth not for his work. That saith, I will build me a wide house and large chambers, and cutteth him out windows, and his ceiling with cedar and painted with a vermilion. Shalt thou reign, because thou causest himself in cedar? Did not thy father eat and drink, and do judgment and justice? And then it was well with him. He judged the cause of the poor and needy, then it was well with him. Was not this to know me, saith Yahweh? Okay, we'll stop here at verse 16 again.
Yeah, that's fine. Shalom.
Shalom?
Shalom is mentioned in Jeremiah 22:11. Jeremiah 32:7, but that's seems to be a different Shalom. And Shalom means retribution. And there were several Shaloms. Jeremiah 35:4, which seems to be a different Shalem. And those both relate to the time of Jehoiakim, those later Shalems. Here, it's possible that we're in the time of Jehoiakim. I'm not going to say that we're really not. I need more context. But this, in verse 11, "For thus saith Yahweh touching Shalem, the son of Josiah, king of Judah." Well, first, we know that if this is the son of Josiah, then he has to be before Hezekiah, who was the king in what seems to be the last two chapters. But the Shalem only seems like a name for Jehoahaz. And in the dictionary, it actually, in the Brown Driver Briggs dictionary, it actually says that it's a name, an epithet for Jehoahaz. Now, Jehoahaz only reigned for a few months, and then Jehoiakim became the king. So perhaps the later context of the context of later passages will give us more information concerning this. But this seems to be Jehoahaz to me, who is only the king after Josiah died for a few months. And then Jehoiakim became the king. And Jehoiakim is also the son of Josiah, I believe. So which reigned instead of his father? Well, Shalem didn't succeed Josiah. Josiah is dead, and evidently Jeremiah doesn't even record his death. He died in battle with Pharaoh Necho when Necho passed through Judah to conquer Carchemish after the fall of the Assyrian Empire. He died around 608 BC. And evidently, well, 609 BC, according to some chronologies, including the one I have here, when Jehoahaz ruled for a few months, and then Jehoiakim became the king, and Jehoiakim ruled for what looks like 11 or even 12 years until 598. From 609 to 598, inclusively, that's 12 years.
Microphone
or at least
activated.
A little over 11.
Hey, wouldn't it be great if we had the Chronicles of the Kings of Judah and Israel?
Yes, because we really don't. We only have excerpts from them.
Do you know anything about how it disappeared?
Well, yeah, you know, really, I know, you know, I don't, because nobody does. We only have evidence that Ezra and Nehemiah had both gathered up what they could, especially Ezra, gathered up what they could and recompiled these books of Kings and Chronicles that we have. But they're far from complete. That the kingdom was destroyed by the Assyrians and in turn by the Babylonians. So I'm sure the scribes preserved what they could, but they certainly couldn't preserve everything perfectly, that a lot of it was lost.
Microphone muted.
And that would just be a few zealous people.
The books of Kings and Chronicles seem to be separate, independent compilations of remnants of lost books. That's how I see it. Remnants or fragments or whatever.
Microphone activated.
Yeah, like Chronicles 2 is a little more detailed, I find, than Chronicles 1.
Yeah, but it's also of a later time. I mean, the book of Chronicles 1 and 2 are basically in one chronologically follows the other. Chronicles starts from David, where 2 Kings starts from Solomon. But in the Septuagint, there were no books of Samuel. 1 Samuel was 1 Kings, and 2 Samuel was 2 Kings, and 1 Kings is 3 Kings, and 4 Kings is, or 2 Kings is 4 Kings in the Septuagint. There are no books of Samuel. There's only 4 books of Kings. So we have Solomon and David, and then in the final 2 books, we have all the rest of the kings.
Probably a better way to title them.
Yeah, I believe it probably is. But when we read about the books of Gad the seer and Nathan the prophet, I think that's a reference to what we know today as 2 Samuel.
There's also Iddo, a book mentioned by the prophet Iddo, I-D-D-O.
Yes, Iddo also. That is probably part of 2 Samuel. Or maybe part of 1 Kings. No, that's part of 1 Kings. It's against Jeroboam, the son of Nebat. I'm sorry, it's later. It's not 2 Samuel. So Jeremiah. It's a little later, and it handled the time of Rehoboam and Jeroboam.
Microphone muted.
So perhaps part of that was compiled in 1 Kings. I can't really tell. We can't tell. We'll never know. But Gad the seer, Nathan the prophet are in 2 Samuel. That's their books. I'm sure, because Samuel was dead. For the whole of 2 Samuel, Samuel was dead. He was already dead. So, of course, he could not have written 2 Samuel. He was dead. I mean, if he could have written it, I want him to come back and write 3rd and 4th and 5th Samuel. No.
Microphone.
Maybe pretty damn good.
Maybe he wrote it when he got conjured up by that lady for Saul.
Oh, geez, yeah, that's what Saul.
Right, but the last time Samuel appears is that event, and that is in 1 Samuel chapter 28. And 1 Samuel has 31 chapters. And Samuel's been dead for 4 of them already. Before 2 Samuel, right? So, I mean, Samuel obviously did not complete 1 Samuel.
Microphone muted.
But I think where the Bible mentions the books of Gad the seer and Nathan the prophet, that they are references to what we know as 2 Samuel, and obviously to the final chapters of 1 Samuel. And the chapter divisions as we know them, except for Jeremiah, were settled by the time the Septuagint was translated. But when the Septuagint was translated, as I just demonstrated, while Jeremiah wasn't in its perfect order, it was in a very different order. And it definitely needs to be rectified. I might be the guy to do it one day. If I ever do a commentary on Jeremiah, I will endeavor to rectify the order of the chapters of Jeremiah. I will. And maybe even do my commentary based on that order. But I probably have to take off a week and have an open forum or something just to do that. Because I would need I'm guessing at least a half dozen solid days just to figure out what the order of the chapters should be in Jeremiah. And the Septuagint has some It the Septuagint variations in Jeremiah are not, they don't sit on the boundaries of the chapters. It's a lot of the chapters are split. Brenton, in his Septuagint, at the very end of the book of Jeremiah, has a chart. And both the Septuagint and the Masoretic text are relatively the same up to chapter 25, verse 14. But then from 25:14 to the end of the chapter, that's chapter 32 in the Septuagint version of Jeremiah. And then chapter 26 of Jeremiah is chapter 33 in the Septuagint. And 27 up to verse 19 is chapter 34 in the Septuagint. But from verse 19 to the end of chapter 27 is not found in the Septuagint. So do you start to see the problems there? That there's half chapters that are missing or that are in a different place from the Septuagint.
If it goes to that level, couldn't it also be like they reconstructed verse by verse? So you could even have verse by verse out of order. Is that possible?
I mean, chapter 49, the first five verses are chapter 30 in the first five verses in the Septuagint. So it's five verses moved from chapter 49 to chapter 30.
It seems like they were really just trying to put bits and pieces everywhere.
It seems like, yeah, though, like they fucked the order up completely
and reconstructed it from scratch or something.
Yes. So it would take a major study and probably a huge amount of time. And I'm not saying I can't do it. Of course I could do it. But so could you, to actually sit and read every verse of Jeremiah and figure out the context of every verse, if it's correct, in the right spot, and every passage. And when I say passage, I mean a group of related verses, to make sure that they're in the right place contextually. And when you move on in the book, you're going to run into something that's obviously like we just did, right? In chapters 20 and 21 here, we saw with Shalem and Zedekiah that those two chapters are definitely out of place. So then we have to go to the end of Jeremiah and try to figure out where they belong in the context of Jeremiah's interaction with Zedekiah, because he does interact with Zedekiah in later chapters. So where do those two chapters really belong in the interaction between Jeremiah and Zedekiah? Because Zedekiah is mentioned, and he's the last king of Judah for the last 11 plus years of Judah. He's the last king until the and Jeremiah, that this in the book of Jeremiah in verse 3, chapter 1, it says that it came also, I'm sorry, in chapter 1 and verse 3, it came also in the days of Jehoiakim, the son of Josiah, king of Judah, unto the end of the 11th year of Zedekiah, the son of Josiah, king of Judah, unto the carrying away of Jerusalem captive in the fifth month. So Jeremiah is basically, it starts in verse 2, where he says that he started to prophesy that the word of the Lord came to him in the 13th year of Josiah. And then in verse 3, it says that it continued to come to him until the 11th year of Zedekiah, which is the very end of his reign in the fifth month. So it's 11 years, 5 months. I was off. So it's 11 years, 5 months that Jerusalem, in Zedekiah's reign, that Jerusalem was taken captive. So right in the beginning of Jeremiah chapter 1, he tells you the duration of his ministry. So we get Zedekiah in chapter 20 or 21 in chapter 21, and then we have Jehoahaz again in chapter 22. We could see right there that these chapters are out of order. And that's the first, and that actually started where Shalem was first mentioned. It had to be where Shalem was first mentioned in Jeremiah chapter 22. I thought he was mentioned earlier in 21. Maybe I'm wrong, but we see that the chapters are out of order already by the time we hit chapter 22. Or Zedekiah in chapter 21:1. We have Zedekiah. So right there, the chapters are out of order, because when we get to Jeremiah chapter 22, then it's speaking about the Shalem, which seems to be an epithet for Jehoahaz. But we're back at Zedekiah in chapter 27:3, 27:12, 28:1, 29:3. That's all Zedekiah. So what happened to Jehoahaz? Let's look. Jehoahaz isn't mentioned in Jeremiah. And how about Jehoiakim? He's mentioned in Jeremiah in chapters 24, 25, 26, 27, 31, 36, 37. Now, Jehoiakim is mentioned in a lot of the same chapters of as being king. Jeremiah 36, 9, the fifth year of Jehoiakim, the son of Josiah, king of Judah. Jeremiah 36, 9. So now let me go back and look at Zedekiah again. Zedekiah is king in Jeremiah chapter 27, 28, 29. Zedekiah is king. And Jehoiakim is king in chapter 36 and chapter 45, the fourth year of Jehoiakim, the son of Josiah. But Zedekiah, Jehoiakim was king from 609 to 598. And Zedekiah was king from 597 to 586. It's very clear in Kings and Chronicles. It's very clear Zedekiah followed Jehoiakim as king. And they were both kings for a very close period of time. Jehoiakim for 12 or 13 years, and Zedekiah for 11 and a half, basically. So how does, in Jeremiah here, if you look up in Bible Works, and Joe, I know you have it, look up Zedekiah in one window, in one pane, and Jehoiakim in another. And it's like Zedekiah is the king in all these chapters, and in intermediary chapters, Jehoiakim's the king. Jeremiah is all fucked up. The order of Jeremiah is all fucked up. I don't have any better way to describe that.
And it does confuse a lot of your interpretations, too.
It will definitely confuse the interpretations. I could never do a commentary until I try to sort out the correct order of the chapters and the passages. I couldn't do a commentary. You can't do an honest commentary. I mean, there's a lot on in Jeremiah that you could comment on, but you can't do a full commentary on a prophet until you sort out the order of the passages. Yeah, and they're like, basically screwed.
And it'd be like Judeo-Christians trying to stitch together a narrative of broken bits, like bits and pieces they can remember, and they try to stitch together this narrative to support the world religion they believe in. Like, oh, here, I've stitched together this narrative about how we're supposed to love all people from this broken, you know. It's the same sort of thing. Like, how are we going to get a coherent narrative if it's all out of... We would sound like Judeo-Christians is what I'm trying to say. It'd just be all confused.
Well, maybe after I do my translation of Wisdom of Solomon, my next project will be the Order of Jeremiah.
You're sounding like it.
I mean, it definitely, if you look at it, just take the passages where Jehoiakim is mentioned as being king and put them next to the passages where Zedekiah is mentioned as being king. And there's definitely a problem. There is definitely a problem where both men are king in the same chapters throughout the entire narrative, practically. It's crazy.
That's a massive problem that it switches so quickly. It's like I said, it's like they're reconstructing it from scratch. That's how bad it is.
Jeremiah chapter 46. Okay, that's a reflection back. Okay, that's cool. I'll skip that one. Jeremiah chapter 45, the word that Jeremiah the prophet spoke unto Baruch the son of Neriah, when he had written these words in a book at the mouth of Jeremiah in the fourth year of Jehoiakim, the son of Josiah, king of Judah, saying, thus saith Yahweh, the God of Israel, unto thee, Baruch, or Baruch. So we have Jehoiakim, the son of Josiah, being the king in Jeremiah chapter 45. But then I'm just going to pick out one example, Jeremiah chapter 34. Then Jeremiah the prophet spoke all these words unto Zedekiah, king of Judah, in Jerusalem. So which is it? Who's the king first or second? Or, wow. That they're definitely out of order. They're seriously out of order. Or there's things in the order that are wrong, that are not properly, that they have to be, that these chapters had to be put in the correct order.
There could also be some missing pieces, I'm thinking.
There could be. Some of them are reflections back, but not all of them are reflections back. For instance, Jeremiah chapter 36, verse 9. And it came to pass in the fifth year of Jehoiakim, the son of Josiah, king of Judah, in the ninth month, that they proclaimed a fast before the Yahweh to all the people in Jerusalem. Now, that's not a reflection. So Jeremiah chapter 36, verse 9, Jehoiakim is the king. But in Jeremiah chapter 34, verse 2, thus saith Yahweh, the God of Israel, go and speak to Zedekiah, king of Judah. And there's no doubt that chapter 34 of Jeremiah should actually fall chronologically later than chapter 36 of Jeremiah. There's no doubt. So there are definite problems in the ordering of these texts. And the great disparity between the Septuagint and Masoretic text proves that there are problems, but I don't think that either of them has it right. We see the same problem with Daniel, but it's a lot easier to sort out in Daniel. If you look at, let's go to Belshazzar in Daniel, chapter 5, chapter 7, and chapter 8. And then let's go to maybe Darius in Daniel, chapter 6, chapter 9, and chapter 11. Okay. Daniel, chapter 5, verse 1. Belshazzar the king made a great feast to 1,000 of his lords and drank wine before the 1,000. But chapter 5, verse 31. Darius the Mede took the kingdom, being about 62 years old. 62. Daniel chapter 6. It pleased Darius to set over the kingdom 120 princes. Daniel chapter 6, verse 8. Then these presidents and princes assembled together to the king and said thus to him, King Darius, live forever. Chapter 9 of Daniel chapter 6. Wherefore King Darius signed the decree, signed the writing and a decree, But then we get to Daniel chapter 7. So what we saw in chapter 5 was that the focus shifted from the Babylonian Belshazzar being king to the Persian Darius being king. Then we get to Daniel chapter 7, and we have, in the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, Daniel had a dream. How do we go from the Persians back to the Babylonians? How does that happen? And then in chapter 8 of Daniel, in the third year of the reign of King Belshazzar, a vision appeared unto me. So Belshazzar is the king again in chapter 7 and 8, after Babylon got conquered in chapter 5. How does that happen? The chapters of Daniel are out of order. But they're a lot easier to sort out than the chapters of Jeremiah and Ezekiel. Because all three of those prophets are out of order. And I don't think Isaiah is out of order at all. Except for one problem that I pointed out, where two chapters are seem to be concurrent with chapters that precede, but they're written in a way that it seems anachronistic if you just follow through the text without realizing what's going on. And I talked about that at length here a few months ago when we were going through Isaiah, and it's in the back of my head, and someday I might get to it in the commentary if I live as long as Clifton, I swear.
Do you know whereabouts in Isaiah?
I gotta go look.
Don't worry, Bill, don't.
Yeah, I have it in my notes somewhere, but I have like a million notes. Yeah. I'm not lying. I'm sorry. I probably have more text and notes than I have than there is text in the Bible, so I'm doing something wrong, right? Definitely. There are some chapters of Isaiah that seem out of order on the surface, but they're not really out of order. It's talking about two different aspects of the same period. So if you don't realize that, you could get confused. And I did speak about that at length here when we covered those chapters in our little cruise through the Bible here. But it's nothing like what we see here in Jeremiah. This is crazy, or in Daniel, or in Ezekiel, where there are chapters that are blatantly out of order, that when Persia conquers Babylon, there's no opportunity for you to have a Babylonian king after you've had a Persian king. That shit just don't happen. There's chapters in Daniel that are not in the proper order, period. And Judeo churches don't even talk about, I've never even heard them talk about this stuff.
Nope.
They don't even care.
They don't. I mean, they could flip a chapter from Belshazzar to Darius and go back to Belshazzar and not even realize what they're talking about.
Microphone activated.
To me, that's just crazy, right?
Yeah, it's really sad. It is incredible. It is actually sad that there's no one that cares at all or even looks into it. And I think
it is because David. Sorry,
I was going to say it exposes them as simply not caring and not actually doing their jobs.
Hypocrites. And it's look like they're pretending. It's like they're pretending to be Bible experts, and they've spent like 4 years at uni becoming experts, and they haven't even done like anything Bill's done.
Look at the things I talked about. And God hates facts.
Yeah, exactly right, Bill. They can't even get that right.
They come out of the university and they don't know anything about that stuff because it's just political, Joe. Needed. They're not studying. It's solely, absolutely, 100% political.
And then you get those bimbo preachers, and their bimbo preachers are like, I've spent 4 years at university. You don't tell me. And it's like, you're a bimbo preacher.
Right. It's sick. It really is sad. The state of academics today is sad. It's all superficial bullshit.
Yeah, all of them. Like, the doctors made a big joke of themselves this year, well, a couple years ago. They're all making, the archaeologists, the historians, they're all just a big joke.
I've got this clown on Facebook right now, today, was attacking a woman who's basically a Chris Agenia student, right? And she's been for years, and she's posting that the flood didn't cover the whole earth. And he started attacking her, and I happened to see it. So I jumped on his ass, and he's calling me haughty. And he's making these flippant statements about Genesis chapter 7. And I'm like, you're the one that's haughty. Do you think I never read Genesis chapter 7? Do you think I never studied the language to it? It's not saying what you think it proves. It don't say that. Explain to me how there were Nephilim both before and after the flood. And he's doing everything he can to avoid addressing that.
Yeah,
and going in 50 other directions because he can't address that.
They were good swimmers.
Yeah, right. 40 days and 40 nights. That they could have had like 60 Olympic medals. Mark Spitz only had 6.
It's true. They make up whatever story to make it work, right? And so one of the stories was Og of Bashan was on top of the Ark hiding.
I heard that one, yeah.
That was actually in the Targum Onkelos.
Oh, okay. They didn't make that up then. All right.
It's actually in the freaking Targum. I read it in that Targum.
My daughter gave me the movie Jonathan. Noah.
It's either Jonathan or Onkelos. I'm really hazy on that because it's been 20 years since I read it. But I read that in the Targum. That Og of Bashan hid on the roof of the Ark. Yes, sir. I read that in the Targum.
It's just so funny how they make stuff up on the spot to make stuff work. Like, as soon as you ask, how could Noah's sons all be of a different race? And they just go into shock and they just go, oh, they must have evolved really quick. And it's like, wait, slow down, slow down.
I never heard that one.
Yeah, it's really nuts.
I was taught that we all devolved from Noah into separate races, that our genetics, by my youth pastor, he said we all became like somewhat corrupted after that, and we kind of like split apart and devolved.
Yeah, right. Like, well, where's kind after kind then? Isn't that how God's creation works? Kind after kind? Say, that's not even possible.
User entered your channel.
Okay, I'm going to go on my other TeamSpeak and put this link in. I opened it up on my main computer. I don't know if y'all could see this, but it's public. It's a public post on Facebook. So maybe you could see it, but that's the thread where I was arguing with this turkey. And I'm waiting for an answer from him. And he hasn't answered me now in 3 hours. So he's probably not going to answer me tonight, but I don't know where he is. A few other people chimed in, including Don Brown. But all Don Brown said is, Mike Jones, you are an idiot. Bill has forgotten more than you will ever know. So that's all he said. That's all Don Brown ever says. He cusses at people and calls them names. He's funny.
Yeah, that's, you have to do that sometimes. I always say, as long as you've got the ad rem right, it's all right to throw in a little bit of ad hom.
Don Brown is all about, yeah, he's a lot, I get into ad hominem, but he's a lot worse. He's a lot worse than me. I don't call somebody a clown until they prove that they're a clown. Then I start calling them a clown. So when they get mad that I'm calling them a clown, I tell them, look, that's not ad hominem. It's not a slander. I'm just telling the truth. You proved it to me. That really pisses them off. It's not a slander. It's not a name. I'm not calling names. It's just a statement of fact. Often it is. If you're going to defend a universal flood without explaining how there are Nephilim on both sides of the flood and Kenites on both sides of the flood, then you're a clown. Because if you're going to claim a universal flood, you better be able to explain how these outside tribal groups are on both sides of the flood. And I'm waiting for him to try that, because I'm going to clobber him when he does. Because no, if he tells me that the Nephilim were on the ark, then my answer is going to be this. Okay, so Yahweh God destroyed the entire Adamic race because they race mixed with the Nephilim. But Yahweh God is going to preserve the Nephilim on the Ark of Noah so that they can race mix some more. Are you fucking kidding me?
That's as dumb as like Christ resurrecting people to put them to death again.
Exactly. And that's what I'm going to hit him with. He's not going to be able to overcome that, but he won't even answer me about the Nephilim. He hasn't answered yet. I've been waiting all day.
I see. Like, you asked him directly, and instead of answering the question you asked, he answered another question. Okay, right. I'll take this challenge. And he says, and all the high hills that were under the whole heaven were covered.
Yeah.
And that's all. That's his answer. That's his.
So
his
he thinks I missed that? Flood. Does he think I never read that?
Yeah, he thinks he's proven it, and then he says, why say more? Does the Bible lie? Does God lie? So now, Bill, you're claiming God's a liar.
Emotional bitch.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's pretty sad.
They'll claim there's a flat earth and then say the flood was global.
That's funny. But later on, Joey insists that he did give me specific answers to specific questions, but he didn't.
I never get an answer on that end of Genesis 15 thing. They never have anything. They'll just go to some other argument I made or make a new argument and never address the Kenites that existed.
It's only five fucking chapters after the Table of Nations descended from Noah. It's only five chapters later. Now, I know it's 1,200 years, but they don't know that. Most people don't know that it's 1,200 years. But I do.
That's immaterial.
There's like five groups there that are not descended from Noah. Plus, in Genesis chapter 14, there's the Zuzims. And Zuzim means roving creatures. They didn't even have a proper name.
Someone tried to argue to me that the Kenites are not actually the sons of Cain, and I went through a Hebrew word study, and he's like, well, it could just be that they're named after, like, blacksmiths, or they could be named after Cain, but they're not really Cain's sons.
Yeah, you know what? The honest fact is sometimes the word Kenite means smith, and when it's used of the husband of, I can't even think of her name right now, the woman that drove the stake through the Canaanite's head, J.L., that's her name. When it's used of him, it means smith. And that's how his wife was so adept. If I gave Melissa a hammer and a nail and said, drive this nail through that skull, she wouldn't be able to do it. But JL must have been working for her husband with her husband, because most women at that time worked, helped their husband in his trade. She must have been pretty good with the hammer and a nail. Drive that stake through Sisera's head in one shot without waking him up and alerting him. And then, of course, a man would overcome the woman if he was awakened. She had to be able to do that and had the confidence that she could do that without a problem. And that's perfectly explained by the fact that her husband is a smith. Sometimes Kenite means smith, but where the word Kenite often appears in the books of Moses, it's in a context of a tribe, not in a context of a vocation. They're a tribe. And they're clearly the descendants of Cain. And when you get to John 8:44, Jesus Christ is telling these people that their father was the murderer from the beginning. And that can only refer to Cain, period. Luke 11. It can't refer to anybody else.
Luke 11, they'll be held liable for killing Cain. If they're liable, they have to be sons.
If they're liable for killing Abel, and that's Luke chapter 11. If the blood of Abel is on their hands, then yes, that proves a second witness that they're descended from Cain. So that proves that the Kenites in the Old Testament are descendants of Cain.
And what was the 1,200 years again? The 1,200 years was between Noah and what again, Bill? Was it Abraham's calling?
If you really understand the Septuagint chronology, you realize that the flood was 3345 BC. And the call of Abraham was actually about 2000 BC, perhaps even a little bit later. And that's because Paul of Tarsus said that it was 450 years between the call of Abraham, the promises, and the giving of the law. So the call of Abraham was really about 1900 BC. So you have about a little over 1400 years between the flood of Noah and the call of Abraham. So those 1400 years are basically a blank in Genesis, between Genesis chapters 10 and 12. They're not recorded. But it's got to be 1400 years. Yes, sir. Close to it. I usually say 12 off the top of my head, but it's closer to 14.
That's not even that long compared to how long some of the older patriarchs lived.
Yeah, but 1400 years of nothing recorded except that in Peleg's day, the earth was divided. And if you calculate the when Peleg could have lived, according to the Septuagint chronology, that was really only about 500 years before the call of Abraham. So at his time, do we have the end of the Tower of Babel event when the tribes are scattered into the various nations? Because that's what it means when it says the earth was divided. I mean, some clowns think it means that the continents drifted apart. That's just crazy. No, the earth was divided among the sons of Shem, Ham, and Japheth.
And so in not realizing this, what error do Judeo-Christians make? What argument was Mike making?
Oh, he just insists that the whole world, the whole planet was flooded. Yes. Okay. But he hasn't addressed the Nephilim and the other tribes that existed after the flood that weren't related to Noah. I'm waiting for him to open his mouth about that because I'll clobber him on that.
Yeah, he says, I beg to differ. I most certainly did offer specific answers. So it sounds like he's just going to keep dancing around being an idiot.
Yeah, but eventually I'm just going to say things that are going to make him very mad and very exposed.
He can show one
that again. Sorry, baby.
He can show one verse to try to prove something, but at the end of the day, he can't really unprove the fact that the Kenites and the rest of them existed. So that's right. What you should challenge him on. Disprove that. Disprove what I'm showing you. Don't show me something that would
Told him that. Go look at the thread. I've already told him that.
Yeah,
in
he
different
came
language.
Strong, and then he kind of just fizzled out because he failed. He completely failed. You know, that's what we should do more often is have a girl go out there and make some sort of provocative statement, and then some idiot jumps on them and creates a huge flame war, and we just destroy them all. It's like we set out the bait.
That's what Victoria did. I mean, she didn't do it on purpose. She just said, I mean, Noah's flood was not worldwide, and that is the lie the churches tell everyone, and nobody studies the Bible. It's obvious. And this Mike Jones comes along and he's going to correct her, but he didn't expect me to come along and correct him. I guess he thought he was going to get that over. Screw him. I ain't going to let go of him. If he comes back, I'm going to smack him right down every time he comes back. He's going to have to tell me why there were Nephilim before and after the flood and where they were. And if he tells him that they were on the ark, then he's in big trouble.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I would do for sure.
Because then he makes Yahweh God a hypocrite. He's preserving them in one moment and telling the Israelites to exterminate them all a moment later. Come on. He's punishing the children of Adam for mixing with them, and then he's saving them. Get the fuck out of here. I ain't believing that.
One minute he's telling Abraham, no, you can't have any other person as your heir. And then the next, you know, he's having, you know, these old people have an heir.
Yeah, right. Well, you could make it. If you think the Nephilim were on the ark, then Yahweh God just flip-flops.
He flip-flops.
Joe Biden.
All the time. One minute he's saying, I'll remember my covenant to 1,000 generations. And then the next minute he's like, oh, I guess it kind of screwed up. Guess I'm going to make a new one. With another people.
But that's ugly how the Judeo-Christian mind thinks. That's how they think. That's how they've been trained to think. God's a hypocrite. God's politically expedient. He changes his mind when he thinks it's safe and there's a better way. So he just changes his mind and flip-flops on issues. And I told you all to kill them all yesterday, but I didn't really mean kill them all. And I'm glad you left some of them because I kind of like niggers too.
Yeah, wow. I'm glad you left some of them because I now realize that as God, I was racist and I repent of my racism and I'm going to change and try and do better because people nagged me.
Yeah, right. Women nagged me. No, it's really sad. It really is sad the way that these people think. But this guy is not going to be able to explain to me why there were Nephilim on both sides of the flood. Unless he tells me they were on the ark. Or, like Don said, they were really good swimmers.
Yep. That bugs me how he talks down on you and basically says, we'll all stand in judgment, so therefore you need to listen to me.
Yeah, dude, you don't even fear God at all. Because if you're going to say something like that, I mean, I would never say anything like that. I would never call upon God to curse me. Because I believe in God, so I'm not going to say something stupid like that. Just shows you that they don't really care. You know,
but when I debate somebody, I try to ignore all the peripheral, like, bitch bullshit that they try to throw in there. And to me, that's bitch bullshit. I try to ignore that and hold them to the core issue.
Same. Yeah, same bit. Like, I don't call it bitch bullshit. I call it emotional stuff, and I just ignore all the emotional drama and just go right for the heart.
Yeah, well, you're just using a euphemism for real.
Yeah, I know. I'm a bit nicer than you, Bill. You're like the mean version. You're like the one who calls people bitches, and I'll call people emotional-based characters.
Okay. Nobody else is going to believe that you're nicer than me, but that's okay. David, I got to cut these audio. I never use TeamSpeak on this particular laptop. I don't think I ever use it because none of it's set up. I still have these damned notifications. Okay, let's get rid of the sound pack. Thank you. Okay.
But you get a new laptop, Bill. Windows 11.
No, this is a very old laptop. Oh. I've had this. I have two laptops, but I've had them both for 8 years. I bought them 8 years ago.
What is it? Windows 7?
Windows 8.
Ah, almost.
But I never used TeamSpeak on this laptop. I've been streaming on this laptop for 8 years. I don't work on this laptop. I only stream on it. It's my backup laptop for streaming. That's all it ever was. And I went to my Windows 10 computer that's on my desk. When I first came on tonight at 8 o'clock, my TeamSpeak wasn't working. It ain't working. It's broke. I don't know what's broke about it, but it's broke. So I wanted to get on. So I went to my Windows 10 computer on my desk and realized that I never installed TeamSpeak. So I went to my backup laptop was sitting here and I started that, but I realized that the TeamSpeak was never really set up. that the options and all that were never set on it. So I'm kind of doing that now. I see we lost Jerry and it's already 10 o'clock. So I guess we're not going to do any more of Jeremiah tonight, but I think we had to talk about the order of the chapters. I think that was important. And we got off on a few digressions. So we'll start next week with chapter 23, I think.
Oh, chapter 22, verse 17.
Chapter 22, wow. Okay.
It was we'll a little quick... autistic, you know, it was a little autistic, but we got there, you know.
Yeah, that's the first time in a long time we broke in the middle of a chapter, but that's okay.